physical body is a golden opportunity that has been afforded to us by God. It is next to God. It is meant for some purpose which cannot be achieved in any form of the body, in any form of the creation. And what is that? That we can go back to our true Father. This is a privilege that we can have only in man body and know that. So God resides in every heart, and we, our souls, are of the same essence as that of God. Who can know God? God cannot be known by the outer faculties, our mind, our intellect. It is solely known can know God, because it of the same essence as that of God. Like knows the like. But we are under the control of mind. Mind is the control of the outgoing faculties. And outgoing faculties are drawn like anything to the outer enjoyments. So we are identified with the man body and outer world so much so that we cannot differentiate ourselves. It is a golden opportunity that has been afforded to us. So that in this period we may have our steps back to God. So it is we who are to go back to God, not this man body. Man body will be left here. This is the first companion that came along with us when we entered the world. But when we go, it does not go along with us. So all masters said, man know thyself, who you are, what you are. We are not the man body, we have the man body. We are not the intellect, we have the intellect, but we are conscious entities. It is we who are living the whole man body. So, to know ourselves first, to rise above these outgoing faculties of mind and intellect for a while. And this is what is meant by meditation. Meditation means withdrawing our attention, which is the outward expression of soul, from all outside and from the body below, come up to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes, where the man dying, you see, his eyes are upturned. And there, when he withdraws all from outside and from the body below, he knows he is a conscious entity. Then he is able to see God into expression power, not the worldly state, but the world. Thy world is a lamp unto my feet and light on my path. So when you rise above there, your single eye is open to see the light of God. This is a practical question. So meditation means that. How to withdraw from outside and from the body below? Come up to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back of the eyes. That's the sort of rehearsal of death. If you know how to rise above body consciousness daily, as St. Paul said, I die daily. Then you know yourself and the old self, which is keeping you in the body. The outer expression of which is light, as well as sound, voice of God. So you follow my point? Meditation, what does meditation mean? Withdrawing your attention from all outside for a while, and also from the body below. Rivet your attention there from where you live in the whole body. So that illumining power is us, our own self. Just a bulb is the hall. It is at one place and gives light and lightens the whole room. Similarly, the bulb of our soul is at back the eyes. From there it illumines the whole body. This is mystery of death. Now, just to have a practical experience of it, just follow, please, as I say, God will give you something. It's a matter of practical self-analysis, rising above body consciousness. So sit in any pose most convenient to you. Don't touch one another. So if one man moves, the other may not be disturbed. That's the only purpose. Sit in any pose most convenient to you, in which you can sit longer. But one thing which you to be guarded against is you should have no tension in any part of the body. Sit quiet, relaxed, but straight. Quite opposite to the yoga postures. They sit tight there. So sit in any pose most convenient to you, in which you can sit longer. Mind that there should be no tension in any part of the body. Sit quiet, relaxed, but straight. Once you adopt any pose, don't change, please. Let your physical body be still. Close your eyes. Forget the world outside for a while. I'll withdraw your attention from all outside for a while. Don't pay any attention to what is going on in the body below. Go on doing it. Close your eyes. Forget the world outside for a while. Also, forget the body below. Pay no attention to what is going on in the body below. What you should do, when you close these eyes of flesh and bones, they do not work, they do not see. But still you see some darkness in front of you. That's the inner eye, or the third eye, or the single eye, with which you see that darkness in front of you. So with the inner eye, fix your gaze at the seat of the soul at the back of the eyes, where man dying, his eyes are upturned, that's the seat of the soul in the body. But if you do that, there may be some tension. So when you see the darkness in front of you, just to avoid tension, just look into the middle of the darkness lying in front of you, outside, opposite to your eyebrows. Look continuously, intently, minutely to find out of what is in there. You are not to visualize anything, not premeditate anything. Simply go on looking constantly, intently, minutely, penetrating to find out what is in there. Fix your gaze. As the sweet members of God, mentally, not with the word of mouth, or gullet, or heart. Those who have been initiated, they may use the charge words. Others have the sweet moments of God, mentally, at intervals, not quick succession. It will continue like that for sometimes short periods, say 15, 20 minutes. Your whole attention will be riveted there. When whole attention is riveted there, you will forget the world outside and the body below. and you'll find that darkness will descend and light will spout forth. You find light coming up. Again, don't look to the whole of the light in front of you, but look into the middle thereof. That light will grow bright and burst to give you sky further. Sometimes sky comes up at the very outset. Whenever it comes, look minutely to find out what is in there. You'll find stars. All masters are referred to it. Then look at the big star out of that, with Abraham, Tulsi, Guru Nanak, and all other saints are referred to it. If you look at the big star, then divert your whole attention into the middle of the big star in front of you. That will open, you will cross it. The moon may come up. If it comes, look into the middle of it, intently, minutely, penetratingly. That will grow, bite, and burst into pieces. You will cross it, as Father Prophet Muhammad did it. There, God will appear to you in some form, He is working. If any form comes up, just look. Absorb your whole attention to Him so much so that you forget yourself. You've got receptivity, He will talk to you. This is Christ power, God power, or Guru power, which never leaves you till the end of the world. So continue looking constantly without break. And don't leave unless you ask to leave. Those who have seen Master's form within, may please hands up. Master's form within. Now you'll find ever since we have been born, we have been looking outside. Two things are very strong with us, even with the child. Either he looks or he hears. Yes? So outer impressions of the world come through all the outgoing faculties. But these two are more potent. 80% of the outward impressions received through the eyes. And 14% from the ears. So ever since we have been born, we have been looking outside. We are identified with the world outside so much so. We have forgotten our own self. We are leading a superficial life. If we rise up, our body consciousness, our angle will change, angle of vision. We'll see the things in their right perspective. Now we are leading a very superficial life. When any man dies, we cry. Really, they know that. If you rise above body consciousness, you'll see everything coming and going, changing like waves of the sea. That's all. So those who are identified with the outside world, they are always crying, weeping. This has come, that has gone. You see? This physical body has been the first companion that came along with us when we entered the world. And when going, it does not go along with you. All your outward things, how can they go along with you? So for that we pray, O God, give us the company of somebody who has risen out of this delusion. Body is changing, being made of matter, being made of matter. Outside world is also changing. That is made of matter. Matter is changing. We are identified with the body. What appears? It is an optical illusion. The two things are changing. We are identified with them. It appears it's all stationary. Well, it is everything changing. If you rise above body consciousness, You'll be out of the delusion. You'll see things in the right perspective. So, those eyes are not open, inner eyes are not open. They have not risen above body consciousness. Sometimes just a wind blows and the branches of the trees wave like anything. There is no waving of the outer, changing of the outside. Because you are identified with that, you do not appear to be changing, but all the same you are changing. That's a grand delusion, you see. And those who have risen above body consciousness and come in contact with the light and sound principle, which is the outward expression of the soul, they are always stationary. Outer waves may come and go. So, this demonstration of rising above body consciousness, we can have only at the feet of somebody who knows it and can give you a demonstration of it. Now, almost most of you said you forgot your wife. Your inner eye was open, saw some light, more or less. But there is life above it, you see. Now we are living the life of senses. It's a grand delusion. Out of this body we will have to leave. And we will repent simply. Man body was given to us. It was a very golden opportunity to come out of this delusion. So we pray God. Otherwise this delusion, you see, we are sometimes crying, some are happy, but there is no happiness, no crying. This is due to all delusion, you see. So when you meet a master, you say, what does he do? He withdraws your attention from all outside. And from the body below, you see the things in the right perspective. Your angle of vision is changed. If somebody dies, oh yes, exhumation goes on. Somebody is born, even then, for him there is no change. So when he comes, he gives you some jewel. What you say, a pearl of great price within you. And who is he? He is God Himself residing in you. The outward expression of which is light and sound. So, and it's a great blessing to have a man body, of course. But it is still a great blessing to have a living master who can give you a demonstration of that, how to rise above body consciousness. How to open the single eye within you. And if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. You find between the two what vast difference it is. A man who is awakened to the truth, who has realized that thing, his angle of vision has changed. He looks to the world in quite a different way. He is not affected by the outer changes. But those who are leading a life of senses, not never risen above it, everything changes. And with that we are changing. And that gives it an optical illusion. So as we now stand, we are leading a superficial life. And the Master takes you out of this illusion. And you see things in the right perspective. So this is the most important thing. After all, we have to leave the body. Why not learn to leave the body now? So that your whole angle of vision may be changed. And all these outer sorrows and joys will have no value to you. Real value will come to know yourself, your all light, your all joy, so long as you remain to be identified with the outward things you enjoy. But really that enjoyment is not those things with whom you are identified. It is your own attention which is jaya, you find there. So when you come to a master, the whole angle of vision is changed. If you but live, listen to the words of the master, live up to it. Your world, you will be in the world yet not out of it. The man body has been given a boat to row across the ocean of life. So your boat will be in the world, but not water in the boat. You cross over to the other end of the shore of life. These are the first ABCs given by your master when you go to him. It does not matter what label you are carrying on your man body. You are a man. You are a conscious entity. You are having man body. And make the best use of the time you have got at your disposal. And you got out of this optical illusion, see things in their right perspective. God is pervading all. And also that since you have a glimpse of Him, if not, you are not deriving the full benefit of the man body you have got. So this is the basic teachings of Masters. The ABC starts from there. Where the world philosophy ends, there the religion starts.
We want questions and answers.
Huh? Are there any questions that you'd like to ask the Master? Yes, sir.
Very strange enough, people want to live. And whenever you come here for meditation, you are asked to die. Are you ready to die? It is touch, you see. House of God in your city, you must remember that. Those who remember that, their life is gained. It is only when we forget death, we go on just led away by the outgoing faculties, identified with the world outside. Never dream out that we have to leave the world. So that's a good, I think, addressing you, are you ready to die? Then all right, go. Well, sit in any pose most convenient to you. Don't touch one another. For the reason if one man moves, the other may not be disturbed. That's all. So sit in any pose most convenient to you. Mind that there should be no tension in any part of your body. Sit quiet, relaxed, but still. Your neck should also be relaxed. So sit, go on sitting as I submit to you. Sit in any pose most convenient to you. Mind that there should be no tension in any part of the body. When you sit, sit quiet, relaxed, but straight. Once you adopt any pose, don't change, please. Be physically still. Be physically still, please. Close your eyes. Just don't think on the world outside for a while. Also, pay no attention to what is going on in the body below. Withdraw your all attention from outside and also from the body below. Fix your whole attention into the middle of the darkness lying in front of you. You know when these eyes of flesh and bones are closed, they don't work. But still you see darkness with some other eye within you. That is called the third eye, single eye, or latent eye. So with the inner eye, don't look to the vast expanse of darkness lying in front of you, but just look into the middle thereof, lying in front of you opposite to your eyebrows. Look minutely, intently, penetratingly to find out what is in there. Don't visualize anything. Don't premeditate anything. So fix your gaze. Along with it, as a sweet memory of God, mentally, at intervals, not in quick succession, so that the inner gaze is not disturbed. Go on looking continuously, without break. If you continue like that for a short period, say 15 to 20 minutes, all attention from outside and the body below will be riveted there. You'll find the darkness will be tamed and light will sprout out. When you see any light, just don't look to the whole of it, but look into the middle of the round. The light will grow more and burst. All the sky may come up. If you find sky, sometimes sky comes up at the very outset. When you find that, just look minutely into it. While repeating the sweet remembrance of God. You'll find stars. If you find stars, just locate a big star out of that, which is referred to by all masters. That's the further way up. You find it, then put in whole attention to the middle of the big star. That will open and you'll cross it. For the moon may come up. If it does come up, just look into the middle thereof. That will grow bright and burst into pieces. You cross it, as Prophet Muhammad crossed it. Although you'll find light, great light, God appears in some form in which He is manifesting, in which He is working. If that form comes up, just put resolve your whole attention into Him, so much so that you forget yourself. You'll develop receptivity, He'll talk to you as one does outside. Then you hear the sound bell coming out. This power is the Christ power, God power, or Master power, never leave it till the end of the world. Go on sitting, unless you are to leave. Those have seen Master's Form.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. This morning, our reader is Helen von Holdenbrook. Are you there, Helen?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Carry on.
Thank you. Today, I'll be reading the last part of Master's Talk, The Search for Truth. It was printed in the March issue, 1969, Satsandesh. It is a great blessing to meet a really awakened soul. You cannot come across such a one unless God desires it so. We cannot even know a God-man as we cannot know God. A blind man cannot find a person with vision. The latter may take pity on the blind man and take him by the hand. When our inner eye has not yet been opened, and we are sitting on the plane of senses, we cannot possibly see the human pole on which the higher power is at work. Apparently, the God pole looks like any of us, and we have no means to understand His inner greatness. Nanak, you know, was called a man with a perverted intellect. Why? Because people had not the eye to fathom God in him. A competent master is a rarity. The scriptures speak highly of a perfect master. It means that there are in the world masters who are imperfect and not fully competent to impart spiritual experience. The world is full of so-called teachers and self-styled masters. Christ warns us to beware of false prophets and half-prophets. A perfect master is one who has experienced the self in him and also has the power to manifest the same in others. He who has seen God can make others see him. No one has seen God but the Son and those whom the Son may reveal. How to know such a fully awakened soul? He is not to be judged by the palatial buildings in which he dwells or the huge congregations before him. The real test is that he should be able to give some practical demonstration of God power by momentarily lifting the soul from the level of the senses. You cannot test him on the level of the intellect, however hard you may try. Even by close contact with him, maybe for a long time. The reality is in him, and he keeps it as a sacred trust from God. He would not go about making a show of it. He can be moved by your genuine and keen desire for God realization. And if you have God's name writ on your forehead, he will certainly reveal the spirit and power of God in you. Ask, and it shall be given. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. So it is a question of asking, seeking, and knocking at the door of God-man. And secondly, the experience depends on the life impulse that the God-man imparts, for life comes from life. Mere knowledge of the formulas from books or so-called teachers will not help. It is the radiation that passes from eyes to eyes and works the miracle. One glance of grace from him is enough to serve the purpose. It is he who raises up and upholds our attention so as to give us the inner experience. In the times of Hazur, many learned persons conversant with spiritual texts would come and enter into idle discussion with the master. Hazur would simply inquire of them if they had any inner access, and if so, could they take others also into the realms within? This would naturally quiet them, for they had no such experience even for themselves. Once Kartar Singh, a sightless philosopher, came to hear Hazur. After hearing the talk, the gentleman got up and said, "I am a great philosopher. I used to deliver rhetoric talks, which would silence all opposition. After having heard your talk, I feel that I am just like a child collecting pebbles from the seashore, while the great ocean is lying unexplored before me." You would realize that there is a world of difference between a talk from a practical teacher and one from a learned person. The master's talk spontaneously flows from the depth of his heart and sinks deep into the hearts of the hearers. The thoughts that descend from above without thinking are said to be flawless and perfect. Attend ye to the true testimony of the saints, for they speak out what they actually see within. I speak nothing on my own, but as my Father bids me, I do. Saint John, Nanak speaking of the, from Saint John, Nanak speaking of God's presence said, "I see my God as in full view." Saints speak with authority. This is the way of sages gifted with divine wisdom. They have love for all and enmity for none. They even love their enemies. Once the disciples asked Jesus as to how they should behave with the people, particularly with their enemies, Jesus explained, "You have heard that it hath been said by Moses, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thy enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies and pray for them, that ye may be sons of your Father in heaven." You would realize that divine laws are given out according to the times and needs of the people. The Mosaic Law was delivered to the people because they were hard of heart. With the change of times, Jesus modified the position as above. The really great persons wish well to everybody. Their love is all-embracing. Their hearts are large like a sea. They do not raise even their little finger against them who cavil and cart and speak ill of them. It is a pity that the world is full of people who forget themselves for the sake of belly. It is very rare that you will find a person who is really in search of God. Our temples and gurudwaras are crowded to suffocation. Thousands of people go there to attend the routine service. They listen quite attentively to the recitations and the talks over there. But just search their heart. Everyone has his personal motive for this kind of religiosity. Excuse me, we make a cat's paw of God. We do not want God for the sake of God. We must, therefore, learn to be true to ourselves. This is the first step and the most important step. God is great and gracious. He gives what we desire. If we want world, he would give us world, but not himself. The process of world is long and unending. Have you realized as to what is the greatest hurdle in our way to God? We stand at the gate blocking the way and pray God to enter. How can he? We must step aside and make a way for him. We must empty ourselves of all thoughts of the world so as to make room for him. We have to wait and watch for him. He comes like a thief in the night, and there is no hour fixed for his coming. God is not deaf. He knows what is passing in our hearts and acts accordingly. The law of God is good, just, and for our ultimate benefit. If we ask amiss, he would not grant us. We must learn to live in his will and accept his will, whatever it be. Therein lies our safety and security. We even do not know what to ask of him and how to ask. The fault lies with us. Sometimes it so happens that our desires are fulfilled, and yet, in the end, things go wrong. It is then that we realize that we had asked something undesirable. Why not then pray God to give us that which he thinks the best, rather than to blame the stars if anything goes wrong? That is why an awakened person has a ruling passion for God alone. All things work to the good of those who win the love of God. How can we do this? We even do not know where God is, and how can we reach up to him? For this, quote, we shall have to rise as high as he is. It is then that we can know him. God is very subtle and beyond the reach of our senses, our mind, and our intellect. We cannot see him with the eyes of flesh. If we learn how to etherealize ourselves, we can come in contact with God into expression and thereby win his love. Now, the question is one of finding a guru of the right type. On the one hand, we have gurus who simply profess themselves as such. By acting and posing as gurus, they make their living. We have nothing to do with gurus of this category. Then there are social teachers and preachers doing their work according to the set rules of the organizations to which they belong. Master is a social animal. Man is a social animal and cannot but live in society. The fundamentals of all social orders are almost similar enough. They tell us to have a clean living, chaste life of truthfulness and continence. This is something commendable. Social reformers can certainly help to raise society and social life of the people to a certain extent. But unfortunately, our reformers too, in course of time, grow narrow-minded and lose their elastic touch with the society, with the result that splinter groups grow within the society. This leads to splitting, friction, and unrest. So whatever they do something of a limited nature for a limited time. The good they do is not enduring. This is the second category of teachers, and we may class them teachers of society and worldly wisdom. They cannot be of any great help to us in self-realization and God-realization. For these objectives, we will have to search for another type of guru, the Satguru type, or one established in Sat or truth. They are realized souls with the knowledge of and access into the realms beyond the range of the senses, the mind, the intellect, and the pranas, the vital airs. They are teachers indeed, and hold in their hands the keys of heaven and hell, and of the beyond. The gnarled sage Ashtavakar, who gave a practical experience of the inscape to Raja Janik, belonged to this category. He was the only rishi who not only professed but claimed to have realized his own self and was capable to make others realize likewise. India, as you know, was at that time at the zenith of its glory, full of sages and seers of different types and orders, but none could demonstrate God to the royal seeker after God, Raja Janak. The great sage Yajuna Valkya could only give the king the theory of pravidya, or the science of the soul. So all we need is a perfect master for our instruction and guidance on the God way. The next question is as to where a perfect master is to be found. You should know that he is not tied down to any particular society or to any particular country. A man of spirit comes and goes like a free wind, and then God may choose any human pole as his befitting receptacle to work through. He may come as a cobbler like Ravidas, or a cloth printer like Namdev, or as a weaver like Kabir. He may take his birth among Jat cultivators or Dana Bhagat. He may appear in one country or the other, in East or in West, or anywhere in the world. Wheresoever God's light may appear, people, like moths, are sure to gather. He may come in a high-class family or be born low. It matters little. But this much is certain, that if he himself is a man of realization, then alone you may expect some inner experience from him. We must then pray day and night for meeting a competent master. I would like to tell you one of my personal experiences. Even as a child, I had some background of my own. Every day, I would take down a couplet from the Sikh scriptures. I would write it down and throughout the day would cogitate upon it. On one occasion, I took from my couplet something where stress was laid for contacting a real guru, maybe a sadhu, or a saint, or a mahatma. This set me a-thinking. I began to pray God to help me to a real guru, so that I may derive full benefit in this very life, and thus fulfill my long-cherished desire. Gradually, this became an obsession with me. I even wished that God may himself shower his mercy directly upon me, as he did to Dhruva or Prahlad in bygone days. But now the times had changed. God's power could now be experienced only through the grace of some God-man. I was afraid that if I erred in my choice, my life would be wasted. For a long time, I continued thinking like this. From time to time, I had divine visitations. It always took the form of the holy man who used to visit me in my meditations as Nanak. I always took the form that came to me as Nanak. In those very days, I composed a poem in which I beautifully described the lovely feature of the divine guide who kept guiding me all these years from day to day on different planes. This state continued for about 7 years. It was only in 1924 that I happened to go to Biaz and met that visionary figure in the form of Hazur Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj. All I mean to say is that God listens to our prayers, provided these are genuine, deep, and sincere. When I inquired from Hazur as to why he had taken so long a time to draw me to his lotus feet, he simply replied that it was the most opportune time to do so. I cannot help repeating that a God-man is not a man in the ordinary sense of the term. He is always a human pole on and through which the God power works. The power of God is pervading everywhere, and on the chosen human pole, it works on so many different levels. As a guru, he works on the physical level as any other worldly teacher would do. He joins in our joys and sorrows. He may even shed tears with us in our distress. All this he does to develop our human nature and our faith in him. Inwardly, he remains as he is, unaffected and unconcerned with all our weals and woes. Thus, on the human level, he acts as a perfect human being. But besides this, he is something more as well. When you leave the physical plane and transcend into the astral world, the guru now assumes the form of Guru Dev and appears in his radiant form. When the disciple is able to manifest in him this radiant form of the master and starts communing with him, he becomes a Gursikh. This radiant form of the master now becomes our guide on the inner planes and leads us to the feet of the Satpurush. The power that merges as in the Satpurush is called Satguru. It is this power that works in the world on the human plane as a guru. This is why it is said, Satguru remains in his fullness. It means he is fully manifested wherever he is, even on the human pole, but is not attached to the pole. Excuse me, we have not yet understood the real nature of Guru and his greatness. Like a little child, we presume to know him, What can a child know of his father, and more so, of the Heavenly Father? We know him only to the extent that he wishes us to know or reveals himself to us. The Guru is as incomprehensible and ineffable as God himself. We simply cannot know him on human level of the intellect. You may take the life history of any great soul and you will find that the heights he gained were because of the intense fire in him. God cannot be had so easily as we may imagine. Rabia Basri, a Muslim divine, suffered from severe pangs of separation from the Lord. She had an intense longing for him. She would go into meditation at early dawn and remain so till night, and then would sit again till daybreak. Her neighbors were surprised at her continuous devotion. Once they inquired of her, "O Rabia, would you kindly tell us if God visits you before you go into meditation or after you have finished the meditation?" She said, "He comes before I sit for meditation." They asked, "How do you know this?" She replied, "It is He who pushes me into meditation. Whenever I feel restless and am overwhelmed by strong feelings and emotions, I know that he has come." This is something normal in the lives of spiritually great. From a very early age, Nanak had no love for the world. As a child, he remained in a sort of self-absorption. He was the only son of his parents. His father and family members could not bear to see him in a state of distress and distraction. Nanak was sent on to a pilgrimage. It did not help him. A physician was called in. He began to feel the pulse of the young man. Nanak himself described this incident so beautifully. "The poor physician came in and began to feel my pulse. How could the simpleton know the anguish in my heart?" And then he significantly added, "O physician, go thy way back, for I am smitten by the love of the Lord." The first thing that we need is an inner craving for the Lord. It is in the furnace of love that the Lord shineth in full effulgence. The past impressions get a good impetus from a man of realization. The latter fans the flame of love in every heart. There is love. But what is desired is love for the Lord and not love for the world. The Guru finds a ready soil in a loving heart for sowing the word of God. Guru Arjan goes on to explain, "Whatever one sets his mind open upon, he cannot do without that. It is a matter of common experience that we always follow the mind. If a child is hungry, nothing would satisfy him except food. A mother may place hundreds of toys before him and try to play with him in diverse ways. The child would still go on crying for milk. Milk is everything for him. This is exactly the case for one who has in him hunger for the Lord. The world and the things of the world have no value for him. The riches and the possessions, however immense he may have, fail to give him any satisfaction. The inner urge for God is gnawing him down. All that he wants is to find a way to God. He is prepared to sacrifice his all for one who can put him on the God way." Once a man went to a Mahatma. The latter was preparing to go to the riverside for a bath. He asked the young man to accompany him. Taking off their clothes, they went to have a dip in the river. The Mahatma pushed the man where the water was deep and held his head down under the water. The man felt suffocated and struggled to raise his head out of the water for breathing. The Mahatma pulled him out and inquired of the man if he had a great choking sensation for the Lord as he had for air while under the water. This is what is required for a seeker after God. Without it, one cannot do anything. Once Hazrat Junaid of Persia was riding along a riverbank when all of a sudden his mare came to a standstill. However hard he would kick the mare, the animal would not move. When all coaxing and kicking failed, he gave rein to the animal to do what it liked. All at once, the animal went into a gallop and took the Hazrat to a mountain cave where an old man was sitting by himself. The Hazrat alighted and remained with the old man for some time, giving him instructions in the way of Allah, the Lord. Before parting, the Hazrat gave his address to the seeker after God. The man, all unconcerned, naively said, "There would be no occasion for me to follow thee to thy place. He who has sent thee now shall send thee again if at any time I feel the need for you." It is, of course, too much to expect for a disciple from his master. The fact is that God is not far away from us. He is in us, though we may not be in him. It is he who directs the God-man to seek and find the lost sheep. I may tell you something from my own personal experience. One day I was sitting with Hazur in the house of one Duli Chand in Amritsar when a Sikh gentleman walked in. Hazur, with a twinkle in his eye, looked toward the newcomer and asked in a familiar tone, "Oh, you have come." "Yes, Maharaj, I have," he replied. Surprisingly, I inquired from him as to how he had come. The gentleman replied, "Last night, Hazur came to me in a vision. He asked me to come to this place the next day. I had never met Hazur before. It is my good luck that I have come to him." What I mean to say is that an awakened soul is just like a person on the top of a hill who, from a point of vantage, can look around and see smoke arising from the hearts yearning for God. When he does witness this, he makes a provision either to reach unto them or direct them in one way or the other to come to him. Such a person is called Guru or a Mahatma, great soul. O Mother, with all thy dainty dishes before me, I feel as unsatiated as before. The love for God is unending and increases from moment to moment. No amount of worldly pleasures can divert the attention of a person suffering from the pangs of separation. The parental love is undoubtedly immense, but the love of the Master for his disciple is still greater and exceeds all bounds. It is as all-embracing as God himself. Once I called on Hazur at Biaz. It was a night time. I offered my obeisance unto him and sat down by the couch on which Hazur was reclining. In the course of the talk, I remarked, "Hazur, such of the disciples who do some bhajan and simran are undoubtedly doing something. But what of those who are still slumbering on the plane of the senses?" Hazur sat up on the couch and said, "Kripal Singh, do you mean that I should stop giving nam? A loving father always wishes well of his children. Am I not anxious that each one of my children should try to stand on his own legs? The grace of the Guru is always with us. His spirit and power is working for our good at all times. If he has left the earthly plane, it does not mean that he has gone away from us. I have told you so often that the Guru power never dies. It's only the human pole that the power changes. He who implants the seed of Nam attends to that seed and helps to sprout and blossom forth into a tree with flowers and fruits. His power continues to work for our benefit both here and in the hereafter. we always err in thinking that God power in the Guru dies with the physical death of the Guru. But it is not so. When God is eternal, His power too is eternal. Is not this power upholding the heaven and the earth and all that is in them? Though we are unable to see Him physically, He is not far removed from us. His astral form in divine radiance is still behind our eye focus. All that we need is to transform ourselves into spirit, to contact the Spirit of God, now in the luminous form of the Master, the Gurudev. In His radiant form, He is anxiously awaiting for us to shower His benediction the moment we reach unto His feet. He is like a veiled lady who would not like to appear in public. If we keep playing in the world and do not turn toward Him, the fault is ours. We must therefore strive to reach the door where He is standing. The moment we get near Him, He will stretch out His hands to hold us and pull us up to Him. Be assured, He will do so for His name's sake. This is His truth, and He will always stand by it. That concludes today's reading. Thank you, Master.
One for the wonderful reading. Excuse me a moment, I'll do a count. So today we had 62 people at the satsang. Thank you everybody for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.